What are the environmental implications of a global population that keeps expanding year after year? Can the planet handle the pressures of humanity's demand for resources? And why have we, as supposedly intelligent Homo sapiens, been unable to halt a march toward the destruction of our own environment? Those are some of the questions at the core of Homo Ecophagus, a deep diagnosis to save the Earth. The book is by local author, professor, and physician, Dr. Warren Hearn, who joins me in the studio. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Hannah, and thank you very much for inviting me. It's an honor to be on your program.
Yes, we're very excited to have you. So just to start off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? You're a doctor and an author, but how did you find these passions, this path?
Well, I'm a physician and an epidemiologist, which is a branch of public health, where you try to understand the determinants of health and illness in human populations. That's the basic science of epidemiology. But I began looking at these issues of destruction of the environment and population growth a long time ago, more than 50 years ago, when I was a medical student. And I was concerned before that about things that I was seeing. But I worked in the Peruvian Amazon in 1964 and other parts of Latin America. And I kept seeing the expansion of human communities, and I was watching the issues of population growth. And it was apparent to me that at some point the population growth was going to increasingly destroy the environment and make it impossible for people to survive, as well as other species. In any case, I started looking at this over 50 years ago during my first graduate work in public health. This was after medical school and after being a Peace Corps physician in Brazil.
Now, on first skim of the book, it looks like it's probably going to focus mostly on the environment. I mean, there's a bird covered in oil on the front cover. But you talk about a wide range of topics, including abortion and public health. So what's the intersection of all of these topics?
Well, it's very complicated in some ways, but it's also rather simple. But first of all, the name of my book, Homo Ecophagus, is my new name for the human species. It means the man who devours the ecosystem, as distinguished from our current scientific name, which is Homo sapiens sapiens, wise, wise man. We are obviously not wise, so we are the most misnamed species on the planet. But my point in the book is that when you look at all of the things that are going on with uncontrolled population growth of the human species, with consistent destruction of the human environment, of the environment over the last tens of thousands of years, and at an increasing pace in the last 300 years during the Industrial Revolution, I'm trying to look at the origins and dynamics of this process. You can't just make a list of horribles and understand why this is happening. Ultimately, what I did was come to the conclusion that the human species now has all the major characteristics of a malignant process. So we are in the process, as a species, of converting all plant, animal, organic, and inorganic material on the planet into human biomass or its adaptive adjuncts, and that we are devouring the planet. So that's the origin of the name of this. And in the first third, I describe how I came to this idea. It was a horrifying idea. I'd like to be proven wrong. But then I have the middle part of the book is a description of the manifestations of this malignancy, beginning at the local small habitat level to a global phenomenon. And then the last part is analysis and policy choices. What do we do about this?
So you're making this diagnosis that we're devouring our ecosystem as both a medical doctor and as a PhD in epidemiology. So aside from just assessing the situation, what are some treatments that you propose?
Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, I do talk about issues of fertility control. So that's one component of this. Obviously, we need to stop destroying the environment the way we are. which is not consistent with sustainability or even our own survival. But, you know, one of the most elementary aspects of this is that the human species has continued to expand for thousands of years. And it's at this point, it's doubling every 40 or 50 years, which means by the end of this century, we could be close to 20 billion people. The planet cannot sustain the current population of 8 billion. So one of the things I'm saying, as long as the human species population is growing, there is no hope of solving these problems. And one of the most elementary things is for people to be able to control their own fertility, which takes us to another controversial subject, which is abortion, which is part of human fertility control. And while the safe abortion is now a fundamental component of women's health care in the 21st century, as it was in the last century, there is concerted and even violent opposition to that in this society and in other parts of the world. But in our society, for example, we just saw the Supreme Court come down with the Dobbs decision, which overturned the Roe versus Wade decision that's been a constitutional right for women for over 50 years. Just now, we just watched the 50th anniversary of that. And the anti-abortion movement in the United States is a violent fascist movement, which is controlled by and which controls the Republican Party. So that's a fundamental political issue. But offering fertility control of all kinds to women and their families all over the planet, which includes birth control, sterilization, abortion, and all those things on a completely voluntary basis, would cost a tiny fraction of the military budget that we have in our country by itself. And so this is an elementary part of that solution, but there's great resistance to it in our society.
And I'd like to come back to that idea in just a second, but just like with physical and mental health treatments, there are always options. Like, treatment is very multifaceted. So you talk a lot about curbing population growth to limit impact, but what else could be missing? What about curbing consumption? I mean, there are huge houses that have these huge carbon footprints, for example. So what else can we do, and what else can be potentially done at a policy level, do you think?
Well, one of the obvious things is that the most immediate threat, perhaps, to the survival of the human species and many other species is global warming. That is the direct consequence of our use of fossil fuels for energy and other reasons. And I think that that is a fatal problem. And we have to stop using fossil fuels for energy. We have to stop using fossil fuels to grow food and in many other ways. And I think because the carbon dioxide that we're pumping into the atmosphere and other gases such as methane are fatal. And we can't survive that. I mean, the average global temperature is increasing. And, for example, the Paris conference tried to set an upper limit of 1.5 degrees centigrade for increasing temperature in this century. And we will probably reach that by mid-century, if not sooner. And that's going to have a tremendous destabilizing effect on the entire global ecosystem. But we will probably pass 1.5 degrees centigrade going right by it, and get to 2 by centigrade by the end of the century, if not higher. So that's one of the things we can do is stop using fossil fuels. And you point out the issue of consumption. Right now, there's the ecological footprint idea developed by Professor Bill Reese and his colleagues and students about 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And basically they're saying that we're using more than one planet's worth of resources. And Paul Ehrlich the other day on the 60 Minutes pointed out that we're using about 7 planets' worth of resources. So we have to stop doing that.
So circling back then to one of your main arguments about fertility control and population growth, you worked as a federal official on family planning policies in the early 1970s.
Yes.
Do you ever reflect on where those trends could have gone and certain recommendations that could have been implemented?
Well, I think that there's been a political struggle in the United States, for example, of whether they're going to allow people to make decisions about their own fertility control. And even President Richard Nixon, who had a lot of serious flaws, supported family planning services for people. In fact, my own activity was as a federal official for a federal family planning program for the OEO health centers across the country. So we were helping about 300,000 poor women across the country in those days. In many ways, the funding for federal family planning services has suffered many blows and gone up and down. But again, the political choices that we make at the ballot box of whether to support candidates who will help fund those programs and help women and have their families have the health care that they need, including their own fertility control, or not. And so in 25 states now, for example, the Republican Party has either made abortion illegal completely or highly restricted. And there's one Indiana senator who's saying that they're going to make laws to prevent women in that state from leaving their own state to get services elsewhere. I mean, it's really a fascist policy. And so these things are catastrophic for women and their families.
So you're one of the most veteran abortion providers, not just in the state of Colorado, but in the country. So with politics surrounding access to safe and legal abortions increasingly being politicized, as you've been saying, how do you see the prospects for the workforce within reproductive health care? Do you think there are incoming medical students, enough of them to keep these services functional?
Well, I think that there are plenty of people who want to do this work, and a lot of idealistic young physicians and nurses and other healthcare workers who want to do that. The policies of the Republican Party have shut down these clinics all over the country, and so women are desperate. They have to go hundreds of or even thousands of miles to get the help they need. That is one important component of it, but I think that the people make these choices at the ballot box, and you can either vote for people who will support intelligent policies to protect the environment and help limit fertility, or you can vote for the people that want to drill for oil in the national parks. So those are the choices we make.
So circling back to the book, you're giving a talk at the St. Julian Hotel tonight.
Yeah.
What can attendees expect, and is this a public event?
It's a private event and requires a ticket, and we're going to have heavy security because of my own personal safety. The anti-abortion people have tried to kill and have killed a number of doctors throughout the country, and I'm on the hit list. So we have to have serious protection. But so the tickets are available through the Boulder Bookstore and their website, and people can come to the event at the St. Julian Hotel. It starts at 6:30 with snacks and refreshments, and then my presentation will be at 7:00. And in that presentation, I will talk to people about what's in the book and how it's organized. Why did I write it? How did I get to this horrible idea that's expressed in the book? And then when I'm making the presentation, I will, for example, give a specific example of the kinds of things, the ways that people modify the environment in the Amazon. And then I will show some slides to show how we get to this idea, what it means. And then we will have questions and answers.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Warren Hearn, for coming on the program. He is the author of Homo Oecophagus, A Deep Diagnosis to Save the Earth. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope that you have a great event tonight.
Thank you very much.